Always Holding a Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazam Maja, Chris Fuchs, John Lloyd, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Mike Franz, Joe Mikendo, Trayvon Brady, Dylan D'Antonio, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Mindard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Nicholas Casso, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Fansler, Darren Kirsch, T. Hamill, Jared Gibbs, Braden Arnold, and Erica Flynn. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. This podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. And we're back with another Smallville special. We are going to dive into the season 11 comic run. And we have a very special guest with us to discuss these for this series, this sub-series in our Smallville special, Mr. Eric Cowan from the Smallville Season 11 Facebook page. He's the creator and moderator, and he suggested we do this kind of crossover discussion leading up to the return of Smallville on Crisis on Infinite Earths this winter on the CW. So welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
As we jump into this here, you started this Facebook group about Smallville Season 11, and you started it before they did the comic, did you not?
Yes, I sure did. I started it like right before the actual series ended. Tom Welling had gave an interview, and he had said something in there about if the ratings were good enough, maybe they'd keep going. I think he was just BSing, but I was like, you know what? Let's go ahead and put some support behind it.
You know, that's funny because I actually went to San Diego Comic-Con the summer of 2011, and there are a couple of pictures of me actually asking this question at the DC Comics panel. And I asked Dan Didio and Jim Lee at the time, running the panel and running DC Comics. And I said, hey, guys, you guys had a lot of success with this Batman Beyond comic, which I love a lot. Is there any possibility we could get a Smallville revival, you know, as a comic book? Because, you know, a continuation. And they're like, oh, that's a great idea. And they moved on. And, of course, they probably already had this working somewhere in the back of their mind, right? Because it came out, you know, the Smallville season line of the comic books, they came out a year after the show. So if you think about the head time they have to get making these things going, I'm sure that was in the works. And, you know, lots of other shows Firefly, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, shows like that have had comic book continuations. And to me, it just seemed like a very logical thing to do because right where Smallville ended is where the Superman story begins, right?
Exactly.
How did you even become a fan of Smallville? Were you a fan from day one? Did you pick up the series somewhere along the way? Tell us about your Smallville origin story, Eric.
Okay, well, the Family Channel, ABC Family, used to just have reruns of it. The show was still pretty early, maybe seasons in at the time, and they would do these reruns, and I would watch them occasionally, and I enjoyed it, but I never like followed any kind of order or anything. And then actually, I think it was Black Friday, I bought the first season for $10. I was like, I always kind of like this show. And I watched it. And then it got to the end, you know, the tornado thing. And I was like, well, damn, I got to watch season two now. So I just went and I downloaded season two and then ended up buying all the rest of the seasons. And man, I just really loved the show.
Now, were you a Superman fan before Smallville?
Superman has always been like one of my top two or three favorite superheroes, Batman being number one. But it definitely elevated Superman up a little higher. I had watched the movies and stuff, and on my own, I started wanting to read comic books. And I got one or two, and I had an aunt who worked at a place called Anderson News Company, and they're the place that supplied, like, newspapers and everything in stores. So they put newspapers out, they put comic books out. Well, every month, she would bring me 20 comic books. because they would destroy them after they took them off the newsstand. So she would take 20 comic books out of there. So like I'd get to Batman, I get Detective Comics, Action Comics, Superman, X-Men, and she would bring me a ton of comic books every single month. So there for a couple of years, I was just in it on all the comic books. I had them all.
So do you still have those comic books from back then?
All right, check this out. They were stolen. I had a storage unit. Yeah, in this huge place, four storage units were robbed. Only four. One of them were mine. All my comic books were stolen. Movies, DVDs, guitar, all kinds of stuff stolen.
Oh my gosh, man. That's like the collector's worst nightmare, right?
Right. I was not happy about it. My comic book collection now is probably just as big as it was back then, though.
So, you know, talking about comics, Smallville superheroes, you know, I really am happy they continue the series with this comic book run. And as I said, it came out, you know, just almost exactly 1 year after the series ended. And it was interesting that they picked up in between the gap in the finale, because obviously the series finale fast forwards 7 years and picks up, you know, if we get a little flash forward into the day in the life of Superman there. But these comic books, I thought it was a good idea to take advantage of that giant gap in the story. So Eric, how did you feel about, I guess, the series finale of Smallville, where they left things, and then going into these comics?
I mean, I love the series finale, other than you never actually got to see Clark in the suit, which I had a problem with. But in general, I thought the finale was really good, really satisfying. But, you know, I think pretty much everybody was talking about maybe they'll do a Metropolis show. They all wanted to see him as Superman, and I was one of those. It's not as good as, like, watching it on TV, of course. But, I mean, it's a much cheaper method for them to go. And I'd done that before, like the Angel. If you ever watched that show, it ended very abruptly after season 5. So they put out a comic book to end that series. So I'd been through this kind of thing before, so I was pretty excited about it.
Well, face the truth, right? I mean, Tom Welling didn't want to wear a costume, right? I mean, that's pretty much what happened.
Well,
so
hopefully he's over that. And I'm guessing that if he does wear it, they're not going to be showing off the pictures like they are of the other two Superman. I don't think they're going to show it off because it'll be a big moment if it happens.
Yeah, the Tom Welling of today and the Tom Welling of 2011 is a very different Tom Welling. And I've said this before. I think, you know, even a couple years ago, I don't think he would have worn the costume. But now, I mean, he's been out to the conventions. He's kind of more in the fandom now. He has a different perspective on it. So will he wear a traditional Superman costume? If I had to place a bet, I would say no. But I do think he will wear a costume of some kind. You know, I mean, he's not going to show up in flannel, okay? He's going to show up in something.
Well, I mean, the pictures that they've released so far, he's in flannel. I'm just
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, they go find him on the farm there, and he's going to live in life. But obviously, he will show up, you know, I assume, right? I mean, if it's just that, I am going to be disappointed. But obviously, he'll show up again, you know, at the end with the big fight, with the crisis fight, right? Whatever you want to call it, whatever episode that is, however long that lasts. I do believe he will show up, and I don't think he'll just be wearing flannel. Will he be wearing a red, yellow, and blue Superman costume? I don't necessarily think so, but.
Well, I mean, how do you not put him in a Superman costume? Because they've already said that the comic books are canon. So if the comic books are canon, how is he not Superman? You can't put him back in the red leather jacket or in the black trench coat. He can't be the Red Hoopler. He's Superman. No.
Well, perhaps he has changed his costume again, right? Because actually one of the first things we do in the first issue is they change his costume.
His underwear
from
away.
What we saw. They take the underwear away. They do a little bit of difference there. So I hear what you're saying. The fact is this picks up, you know, after even the last time we saw Smallville. So I think it's in real time, which is cool because, you know, in the crisis appearance, right? Because, you know, as we recall as Smallville fans, if you do your math, the last scene of Smallville takes place 7 years in the future, which was 2018, which was a year ago, right? So we are now a year in the future from that. So who knows what could have happened from that. And that's what we're going to be picking up with them in live action. The comic books, though, they are set in between in this 7 year gap. And, you know, if I have one complaint about these comic books is that they didn't last that long. They pretty much only they lasted 8 episodes, 8 stories, if you will.
32 comic books.
30, if you divide them, we are going to be covering all 8 of them in 8 different Smallville specials, this being the first. I had always said that I would cover these comic books, you know, at the end of the show, because it just seemed the natural time. But, you know, why not? You suggested it. I thought it was a great idea to team up and do this. So here we are talking about them. The thing about the comic books being, we say there's 32 issues, you know, these were released digitally first, and then they came out kind of like as mini issues, and then they were they came out in a print collection after that. And this is, I'm not even talking like graphic novel collections they have now, like Guardian, right? Now these came out like number one, number two, number three, number four, and those four issues together create the first arc, which they do sell as a graphic novel now called Guardian. So Eric, I was wondering, how did you read these? Did you read them digitally or did you wait for them to come out in print?
I've got the prints and I've got all 32 issues. So I sit here and I read out the prints.
Same here. I have all 32 original issues. And I actually did not read them digitally as they came out like on a weekly basis. I waited for the monthly collection and subscribed to that. And just for some context, you know, these came out in the height of the New 52. So this is the Smallville comic books really were the closest thing you could get to a traditional Superman at that time. Because I don't know how familiar our listeners are with, you know, the comic books, but the New 52, they had rebooted everything. Superman was kind of a different take on the character. Him and Lois Lane were not together. So it was one of these attempts to reinvent the character, right? But of course I'm biased being a Smallville fan, but I truly do believe that during this time period, Smallville was the best Superman comic book out there.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. Not that I was actually reading all of them though. So, but I'm so invested into the show. How would it not be the best?
Right, there you have it. There you have it. So you want to get into this? You want to talk some Guardian here?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So I gotta say, I thought this was a really excellent first story arc because it combines a lot of things. You know, traditionally Superman's first appearance to the world, right, is saving a space plane of some kind, right? And, or saving a helicopter, as we've seen, but saving some kind of aircraft. And that's exactly what they do here. They tie in, like, Lex Luthor wanting to take control of space things, which is a common theme, but kind of similar to the Lois and Clark pilot, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And so they wrap all this stuff together. They reintroduce the status quo, and they throw in lots of bits and pieces from other Superman things that you know just with the Smallville twist. You know, things like Cyborg Superman, Hank Henshaw. Right, is in this, and he's kind of the physical threat, and the way they play him is kind of like they played Metallo in the animated series. So anyway, I think this had a really good foundation, and getting us caught up with the characters after the finale. It takes place 6 months after the quote unquote current time of the series finale, and as we said, Superman has changed his costume a bit to lose the trunks as well. But so what are your overall thoughts on this arc? Guard, of course. A one-word title, Guardian.
Rereading it, it's even better than I thought it was. I guess we'll get into it in a minute, but I love the tie-in at the end that actually ties into Crisis on Infinity Earth.
Yes.
The whole story was even better than I remembered it being. I was actually really enjoying reading it.
Yeah, no, it's by Brian Q. Miller, who was a writer on Smallville. So there are a lot of, you know, deep cuts and great continuity from the show. They go so far as mentioning the exploding baby from Ageless. I mean, like that is a deep cut. So very proud of them there. They always have some kind of, at least in the artwork, which was by Per Perez, who I was unfamiliar with, but I think did a great job capturing the likenesses most of the time. You always have little, they have references to, you know, Doomsday, Lionel, other things in the artwork that references previous episodes. So it's great to have all these callbacks to the show. It's a real rewarding read for someone who's watched the whole show and a big fan and real knowledgeable of the mythology to see that they remember it too.
Yeah.
So some of the things here about Lex Luthor, right? It's interesting that, of course, he was quote-unquote dead for 2 or 3 years as far as the world was concerned. And they addressed that. You know, they have Lois Lane being like, hey, where were you? You know, stuff like that. And also, they have him dealing with the repercussions of the memory erasing drug that Tess gave him, and they have a kind of a fun way to resurrect Tess. It's many a sci-fi trope where you see someone in your head, you know, and Lex is kind of haunted by her. It's actually her Tess Mercer is not some hallucination. It is a hallucination to him, but it's really here because they say when they did some more studies, they found that that neurotoxin somehow connected to people who used it. So I thought that was a fun way to bring back Tess, who really became a great character in the last three seasons of Smallville. So what did you think about Lex's whole story here?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. His memory's completely gone, but he still sees his sister. They're connected by consciousness, so her consciousness resides in his body. He can see her. No one else can, and there's some pretty funny quips there with, like, when you remember when Otis walks in, and he's like, oh, you're talking to your sister again? I'm sorry about your condition, Miss Mercer. You know, it's like, what an idiot, you know?
Well, okay, let me ask you that. Otis, right? Like, what did you think of them bringing back an Otis-type character?
Oh, I thought it was pretty funny. He was pretty good in the original movies. So, just, they brought him in, made him an idiot. You know, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, he is such a touch point for Lex, right? It's even in Supergirl, he has an Otis, you know? I mean, yeah. It's like, they always bring this back. They had actually, there was a character in Smallville, his name was Otis as well. He was like a scientist for Lex. It was just a little offhand reference, but it's funny how they keep coming back to that, like, oh, Lex Luthor has to have an Otis, right? It's like, okay, but they got it. It's fun to have somebody like Lex to talk to and play off of, especially when he's kind of a nitwit.
Yeah, like, I actually giggled a little bit when he said that, you know, sorry about your condition, Miss Mercer, just an invisible woman he's talking to.
Yeah. So then Lex, you know, Lex has some good scenes with, he has a good introduction scene with Clark, on the street, Clark Kent in disguise. And then also he has a couple of good scenes with Superman. And these are the scenes that I always wanted to see in live action. Like I always, you know, I think the last scene between Clark and Lex in the series finale is great. But I always wanted that scene between this Clark and this Lex that we got at the last scene of the Lois and Clark pilot or the last scene of the Superman animated series pilot, you know, where he's like, you know, floating outside his window and they kind of have a standoff. And we got that a couple times here. And I really did like the way they played up the Lex-Clark relationship here with Lex not knowing his history, but Clark, of course, remembering everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's an interesting dynamic. You know, we never got to see, but what would have been so interesting to have going forward. And so we have that going on, and we actually have that. We have that moment at the end where, you know, a Superman's like, oh, maybe I misjudged you. But then he quickly realizes he didn't misjudge him because Lex now has I think it's a brilliant, you know, plan by Lex Luthor, as always, right? He's exposed, you know, Superman to this kind of radiation where he can track him everywhere he goes. So he can find out everything about his life. And, of course, you know, that has repercussions for the stories moving forward.
Yeah, sabotages the space shuttle launch. And Hank Henshaw, basically, for more or less, he dies, becomes Cyborg Superman, all because of a setup by Lex just to radiate Superman so he can tell where he's at. One thing I didn't really understand is why he told Superman about it, because he could have found out his identity if he hadn't told him.
Yeah. All that monologuing, right? It's like, come on, supervillains. Yeah. They never learn, right? You know, and Hank Henshaw, you know, let's talk, because he's an extension of Lex's story. What did you think of their modernization or redesign of this, you know, cyborg Superman character?
I mean, probably isn't as good as the original comics, but, you know, they've done that a few times. Doomsday wasn't quite as good as the comics Doomsday. There's a couple of things that aren't necessarily as good, but I thought it was a pretty good telling of just how evil Lex is right away, that he's willing to kill all these people, put all these people in danger just to be able to tag Superman, just for that. And not even to really follow him around, just to let him know, just to basically torture Superman. He's willing to do that to him. And you got to think, he doesn't even know Superman that well. He's known him for 6 months. Before that, he's got no memories of the blur, none of that. So the hate has started that quickly. And he's already, you know, even though he's lost his memory, he's still lost it. He's very evil. And it's just letting you know that he's willing to kill these people. Or, you know, Hank didn't actually die. But, you know, all those people could have died if Superman hadn't saved them. He doesn't know. And he's willing to risk all that just to tag him with radiation. I mean, that's out there.
And they did take a page, like I mentioned earlier, from the Superman animated series version of Metallo, where John Corbin was like a henchman for Lex Luthor. And he's about all like the sensation, right? He's like, oh, smell and touch and feel and all that, right? And you're like, oh, I know where this is going, right? And that's what kind of, you know, Hank Henshaw when Clark Kent interviews him, which I think is a good scene as well. I like seeing reporter Clark Kent in this, right? Something we didn't get to see much in Smallville, obviously, till the very, very end. But he's talking about, oh, yeah, he loves the sensations of food and hugging his wife and all of these, you know, living life experiences stuff. And you're like, oh, well, I know where this is going, right? So then when he becomes a cyborg, you know, he has no feeling, and that really would drive you insane. I thought that was a really good story beat as well, to make him a really sympathetic character.
Yeah, the interesting thing, though, is that him and his wife both blame Superman. Superman saved everybody and pretty much, I mean, did the best that he could to save Hank, and to an extent did save Hank, but they blame Superman for not getting there fast enough, like it's somehow his fault. You know, that's kind of pushing it, but...
Well, I thought that was interesting, too, because there would, in a world with Superman... There would be people that would be like, "What the hell, Superman?" Right? As the wife says, like, "You push it. This guy can push a planet out of orbit, but he can't save my husband." Like, I can see how, you know, if people are in grief and they're not thinking clearly, yeah, it is easy to criticize something like that. And I thought that's interesting that they went there. Where you're right, not just Hank Henshaw, who had, you know, obviously, you know, pay the bigger price here, but his wife as well, both blaming Superman, and that shows you why a guy like Lex Luthor can so easily turn the public against him when he wants to.
Yeah, it's like, wouldn't you more likely be, you know, to blame the people who sent you up there without it being properly prepared than the guy who saved your life but didn't do it fast enough?
I mean, that's people for you, man. They're never satisfied people, right?
That's right.
You know, and a couple of beats here, you know, obviously the shuttle rescue reminded me of Superman Returns, which is, you know, again, a reference to the original Man of Steel comic books by John Byrne, the reboot where he saves a space plane. So I like that. That thread continuing on through Superman adventures, and actually the very beginning where he saves the Russian space station, you know, that is very Superman 4, which is the beginning of that film where Superman saves a space station. Well, right,
let's just forget about Superman 4. I have 3 and 4, but man, they're both so hard to watch. People complain about Superman Returns, but man, Superman Returns is way better than 3 or 4.
It's interesting, you know, I kind of go back and forth on Superman 3 and 4, you know, because back when I was younger, I was like, man, Superman 4, at least it treats the character with dignity or something, right? Because Superman 4 is, like, more familiar. It's like, oh, you're more of Daily Planet stuff, more Lex Luthor. Gene Hackman is Lex Luthor comes back for this, right? Superman fighting another superpowered person, even though they've made him up for the movie, and he's Nuclear Man's pretty ridiculous. But... Superman 3, and you're like, oh, Richard Pryor in a computer? What is this nonsense? But now that, you know, of these days, I honestly say Superman 3 is better. And Superman 3 is actually pretty enjoyable, just an enjoyable film because the production values are way better, right, than Superman 4. Superman 4 is so tough to watch because it's so cheaply put together. But Superman 3, it's kind of fun. You know, it's fun. I love the Clark and Lana stuff in Superman 3. Annette O'Toole, Smallville's Martha Kent, playing Lana Lang in that movie. And then the evil Superman stuff is great. You know, Christopher Reeve is evil Superman.
I probably need to go back and watch those because honestly, it's been about 10 years. I have them on DVD. But the last time I watched Superman 3, I hadn't seen it since I was little. And then I seen Richard Pryor's name pop up and I was like, I didn't remember Richard Pryor being in this. This is going to be great. And then I'm like, what the heck? It's the one where he gets drunk, right? Superman gets drunk.
Yes, he's at the bar and he's flipping peanuts and stuff. And there's just rewatch it with a fresh mindset. And there's some good stuff in there. You know, it's enjoyable, I think. But yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, neither of them are five-star films. So anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, you know, I will say, you know, capturing the look of the characters, like I said, there are some panels where, you know, I'm like, oh, that looks like Tom Welling, or that looks like Michael Rosenbaum, or that looks like, you know, fill in the blank, right? And there are others where I'm like, that looks nothing like these characters. So I don't know if it's like, it's a tough thing to draw something based off live action because you don't want to look like you're just tracing pictures, but at the same time, you need to keep to a certain parameter. Like I don't know, you want to make sure that I can tell I'm reading a Smallville comic by looking at it, not just a generic Superman comic. So ultimately, how well do you think they did on this? Because like I said, I think they're hit or miss, but I think overall they did a pretty good job.
I definitely think they could have done better. Like some of the... I believe it's the cover for the entire first episode. It looks a lot like Tom Welling. But then if you look at like all the other covers, it looks a lot like you're just looking at Superman, especially like for number 3. It looks absolutely nothing like Tom Welling. Not at all. It just looks like a Superman from a comic book. He doesn't even really seem to have the long, very long hair, anything like that. So I think they could have done a much better job not going so generic with the Superman look.
And to that point on the writing end of the scale, though, and I think this comes from Brian Q. Miller being a writer on Smallville in the later seasons, I think they really capture the voices of these characters really well, especially Lois. And then also, you know, I'd say Chloe and Oliver as well. I think they're the strongest three. Like, I can hear the actors in my head when I read those lines, you know. Lex, too, yeah, to an extent, but this is a totally new Lex Luthor, you know, to a point. But I think really Lois more than anyone else, like, I'm like, yeah, that is totally Erica Durance's Lois. I'm hearing in my head, right?
Yeah. No, they did 10 out of 10 for writing. If it was the TV show, it would be almost the exact same. So the writing exactly is pretty much perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tom Welling, it's Tom Welling, Superman/Clark Kent, right? These are situations we've never seen him in before. So it's tough to be like, can I hear Tom Welling saying these things? But I, you know, sometimes I really could, but other times I was like, oh, this could just be generic Superman. But it is Clark Kent kind of putting on, like when he saves the Russians, right? I'm like, okay, he's putting on his Superman act, so I can buy that.
Oh yeah, that's how I always did it. He's kind of taking, like, that's something he's not used to, is red, blue, blur, or any other character. He doesn't hang around the talk. So now that he's got to hang around the talk, they've got to put some kind of persona with him. So anything that he says in character, I could take from something outside the show because it's something we've never seen.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And you know, following up, you know, I like their commentary and quips about, like, you know, Lois is something about my forever fiance, right? Because they were gonna get, yeah, married, and they're not. They have all these wedding presents, and so that continuity from the show staying on. And
yeah, that is one thing I didn't get about the show, though, is they waited so long to put him in glasses. And if I haven't seen the finale in a while, but I believe even during his wedding in the finale, he's not wearing the glasses. But somehow, no one's going to notice that he's Superman, even though he started wearing the glasses, what, like 10 episodes before the finale. It's like, okay, you wear glasses for a few months and then nobody realizes it's you.
That, yeah, that I is mean, a, it, that is a terrible problem with the finale. Like, it's like,
I remember that there were people online suggesting that Zatanna make him glasses, and they're almost like a spell where people just see this nerdy guy. And that would have been great. Something like that.
There's so many ways they could have addressed it, and they never did. You know, and I honestly, like, there are many points, you know, well, this is part of the fun of this conversation. We'll kind of go off tangents here because, you know, we've never talked about Smallville before together, so this is fun. The glasses, right? There are, like, three or four points in the show. I think there are three distinct points in the show that he should have worn the glasses. One, he should have worn the glasses starting in, you know, season three in Whisper when he got glasses for the first time. I don't know. Just keep the glasses, right? Very simple. Then definitely when he's in beginning of season 8, when he started at the Daily Planet, like, seriously, bro, like, you're in Metropolis now. You can't be Clark Kent running around without glasses at the Daily Planet. Like that doesn't make any sense. You know, finally in season 10, at the very beginning, when, you know, when him and Lois are, you know, they're on the same page about a secret identity and stuff. Right. Like, here, wear these glasses. Like, I know eventually he does. But, like, I think he wears the glasses, what, the last four episodes of season 10? Like, that's it? Like those are three distinct times. And I said three or four.
And he's not even always wearing them. So, like, literally the same day he becomes Superman, I believe I'm right about the wedding. The same day he becomes Superman, he's standing there in front of a bunch of people getting married without the glasses on. I mean, who in the world? I mean, don't get me wrong. The entire idea of people not knowing who Superman is because of the glasses is a little silly in itself. But at least you can say, you know, they've never seen him without them, you know? So in this case, people have rarely seen him with them. So,
yeah. And there are pictures of Clark Kent, like, for years, you know, without glasses on. This isn't like, you know, the good old days of, like, you know, when Clark Kent goes to the Metropolis.
They pick up the Smallville Gazette, and there's a picture of Superman on the cover, and it says, you know, local boy saves lives. And it's like,
exactly.
Come on. Yeah.
So there's a suspension of disbelief you have to go into with Superman, and this is a victim of the show not knowing how long it's going to last, right? Like, if they really knew how long they were going to go, they probably would. But again, I don't know. Tom Welling didn't want to wear a Superman costume. Did he also not want to wear glasses? I don't know, because, you know, you think now, like, glasses are, like, cool and trendy, right? But Smallville was still, it was of a different age, and when glasses were still, like, glasses, I don't know, right? It was like during the run of Smallville, glasses became cool at some point, I think. But they weren't quite cool yet. So I don't, maybe they were hesitant to put their main, you know, the CW, right? Like put their leading sex symbol of a guy, Tom Welling, in glasses. But if this was today, I think it would have had a different look. And, you know, you look at shows like Lois and Clark. Dean Cain's Clark Kent is always wearing his glasses. If he's at home by himself, as he's in Smallville talking to his parents, he's almost always wearing the glasses. And so that's an important part of the character. And obviously, you know, the comic books do it right because he really is a fully formed Clark Kent at this point. But that is a seriously missed opportunity on the show.
Yeah, that's a big difference is that, yeah, Dean Cain changed his hair, always wore the glasses. So he always, I mean, realistically, it wouldn't fool anybody. But if you could somehow believe that it would fool somebody, at least he's always these two completely separate characters. When at the end, when Clark is Superman, he has his normal hair. He looks the exact same as he looked at his wedding wearing a Superman suit.
And who are all those guests at the wedding? Eric, can you tell me? Because I certainly don't know who all those people are.
No, just a bunch of random people who are going to be like, why the hell is Clark Kent dressed up in blue and red? Why are they calling him Superman? You know?
Exactly. Oh, man. You know, some other references from Smallville, some deep cuts. I really liked this. They made Star Labs, which is a very well-known part of the DC mythology, especially the Superman mythology. They made it Swan Technology and Research Labs, based off Dr. Virgil Swan. They even have a little statue and a painting of him. It's Star Labs, so that's a great nod to Christopher Reeve's character on the show. And that's where Dr. Hamilton works, who was also on the later seasons of the show. So again, they're carrying on all these threads from the show, Smallville specific things, right? And that is what really makes this comic, you know, stand out. These are Smallville specific characters in Smallville specific situations. They're just later on in life. So it would have been really easy to just slap Smallville on something and had the generic Superman adventures. But I'm glad they really they leaned into the mythology of the series, right?
That's why it was important to have Brian Q. Miller or at least some writer from the show doing it. That way they actually stuck to the show.
You know, calling it season 11, do you like that they called it that? I have no opinion either way. But I just thought it was interesting that like this is like the official continuation. When you call something like season 11, you know, it kind of makes it official, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was cool with them using it. The only problem I had with it is it basically confirmed we're not getting a season 11 TV show, which I didn't think we were anyway. But that would be the only problem that I had with it. Otherwise, it worked out good for me because I already had a page called Smallville Season 11 that had like 30 or 40,000 fans at the time. So, all right, worked out for me.
It worked out great for you, man. Yeah, totally. And you know, and speaking of, and that's the whole, you know, and it's like it's a kind of tie together here. We can wrap up if you have any other thoughts, but you know, the whole reason we're doing this is there was some conversation about, hey, Smallville's coming back. Are the season 11 comics canon or not? And canon is such a funny word in fandom, right? I mean, I'm a Star Trek fan, and that's all people talk about is what's canon, what's not, that kind of stuff, right? And eventually somebody said, yes, they're canon. And to me, okay. And to me, and you might disagree, but you know, call me cynical, but it's like somebody at the CW hears that question and they're like, sure, nothing we're going to do with Clark and Lois and Crisis on Infinite Earths is going to contradict those comic books. So if you guys want to believe that happened, good for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's good. Like, I think it's good. They're not going to outright, you know, erase them or ignore them. But I think, you know, people just need to keep in perspective. Like, they're not going to reference anything that happened in these comic books. And had they wanted to tell a story that would have contradicted them, they would have. So I like that there is some sense of like, we're not going to throw this away, but don't, I mean, I just want everybody to keep their expectations in check. They're not going to reference all the events of the season 11 comic books. I mean, that's my take on it, Eric. What about you?
Well, it'd be silly to reference them because I mean, how many of us have actually read them? Cause I'm telling you, it's very, very few. Like 3 million people saw the finale, which I'm sure, you know, after digital and all that, it's way more than that. But I'm betting people who read the comic books is probably, even like somehow read them digitally, anything, I bet it's less than 100,000. I bet it's not that many. So, yeah, it would make no sense because they started referencing things that happened in the comic book. People would be like, what the hell are they talking about?
Exactly.
Yeah. Even me, like, because it's been so long since I've read them, I would probably be like that. Like, I remember the show pretty damn well, but the comics, not so much.
Yeah, and I'm saying because I have read these when they came out. I'm not going to lie, I haven't read them since. You know, I mean, I liked them a lot, but I put up great. I'm glad this exists, and I put it in my shelf in my box, and went on about my business. But then pulling it back out to have this conversation with you, like, I really enjoyed it. Like, I was impressed by how much I liked it. Because, you know, back in the day, you're so starving for more Smallville content. You're like, oh, my God, they're doing a comic book. Oh, my God. Like, you know, blows your mind. And then you read it, and of course, you're so hyped up, you're going to love it, right? But it's good to say that through the distance of time and a level head, I still think they did an excellent job with these.
Yeah, me too. I like how, you know, you got a little bit more of Oliver and Lex meeting in the comic book. I thought that was good. Basically accusing him of murdering Tess. And then, like I said, I can't really remember where it goes from here in the comics, but it finishes with you got a spaceship that, or some kind of ship that lands anyway. You got Chloe and you got Oliver, and they're looking to figure out who's in it. Oliver ends up getting the shit kicked out of him by this person, and it ends up being Chloe with brown hair, and it's Chloe from Earth 2, and she dies.
The Smallville Earth 2.
yeah, the Smallville Earth 2, I should say, I guess. So, but then again, if that's, I wonder how that actually works, because you would think that pretty much any planet you're on, if you figure out this system, you would consider your Earth Earth 1, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, like when in Elseworlds last year in the Arrowverse, right, when Barry Allen shows up and he's like, I'm from Earth 90. Like, who told you that?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You would think that when you figure this out, unless somebody from like Earth 1 comes over and tells you about it, then you just, mm-hmm. you're automatically going to call your Earth Earth 1. So right. that actually could be something that possibly goes against it. I didn't really think about that, but she's from Earth 2, but is she from the same Earth 2 that they call Earth 2? And Superman is obviously not from Earth 1. So I'm going to guess that it's just a distinction that Smallville considers their Earth Earth 1.
Well, I'm very interested to see, and we know that they will have a designation, right? It will finally be quote unquote canon what Earth Smallville is in. And you know, they've been calling the Flash TV show that Flash 90, because it came out in 1990. You know, that works, you know. Yeah. And then but to me, I guess if I had to label Smallville, I would call it Earth 21 because of 2001. Like, I don't want to call it Earth 2001. I think that's too lame. Like, I want to keep two numbers. So I would call it 21. And then by extension, their Earth 2 would be Earth 22. That's just me right now. Like, whenever they give us the real numbers, I'm very excited about it. I think Earth 38 is such a random number for Supergirl.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty damn random. I figured she'd be Earth 2, you know? But that, no, she's Earth 38.
Three or five. I understand that Superman came out in 1938, but... I mean, I don't. That's the only reason that they have for that. But whatever. So we'll see. There will be a map, I'm sure, at some point, right? Like, what Earth is Black Lightning on? We're finally going to figure that out, right? So I'm very excited to learn these things. Speaking of the multiverse, right? I mean, that's the tease at the end of this arc, right? Oliver and Chloe find this spaceship. I love how they track the spaceship that crashed. And Chloe's like, oh, because where else would anything crash? Because it's in Smallville. And they go there in the cornfield and they see it's a Queen Industry ship. And, you know, they have this confrontation, like you said. And then it's the Earth 2 Chloe. And then a monitor shows up, right? I'm like, whoa, that's a deep cut.
Exactly, yes. Very much like Elseworld. It even kind of looks similar.
And this is why I was honestly surprised they said that season 11 was still, you know, quote-unquote canon. Because I don't know how they're going to rectify these monitors and the monitor and anti-monitor that we'll eventually get in Crisis on Infinite Earth. So I'm curious to see if it all still tracks, but that's going to be part of the fun, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping they somehow do make it track, but it's like I said, I can't really remember where it goes from here. I do remember the next issue is going to have finally Batman versus Superman. So that's going to be great. He finally gets to meet Batman. Something they were never allowed to do on the TV show. So they basically turned Oliver into a very, very, very Batman-like character, which they did again in Arrow. And they just keep following that. We're not allowed to use Batman, so we'll just turn Green Arrow into Batman.
Well, and that's funny about that, because Green Arrow was a Batman ripoff character to begin with. So to me, it kind of works, but yeah.
It does. They took it to the new Arrow show took it to a whole other level. Like, he is the one Ra's al Ghul wants to continue his legacy and stuff. I'm pretty sure that's Batman.
Like, the first, literally the first three seasons of Arrow are like the Dark Knight trilogy. There are scene for scene similarities between them, and I understand why they did that because this is what people like. But
they actually said when the show first came out there will not be superhuman beings in this show, that it's going to be very much like the Nolanverse, and that was their plan. And I understood it, but I'm glad that that Warner Brothers said, nah, screw that. We're putting other heroes in there.
Yeah, as soon as The Flash showed up, it was game on, you know? It was a whole nother world. So, and then look at us now, right? 8 years later, Crisis on Infinite Earths. But I will say, you know, about Guardian, final thoughts here on this. I like, because you mentioned Batman coming, things like that. I liked how this was a self-contained Smallville Superman adventure. And from my memory, this was not that they like got, you know, bad or worse or anything, but this was my favorite of the quote unquote episodes or story arcs, the Guardian arc, because it didn't rely on a gimmick like, here's the Batman one, here's the Wonder Woman one, here's the Green Lantern one. Like, it was almost like they were going down the list of things they couldn't do on the show. So they just did that. I'm not saying it was bad, but I'm saying I liked how this one was an original story that wasn't reliant on, hey guys, didn't you ever always want to see this hero on the show? Well, here he is. You know, you follow me, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. That you feel like kind of like the Batman and Green Lantern when they eventually put them in there, it was because everybody wanted to see it. And it's like, now we can finally do it. It's almost like a pressured into it kind of thing. But I know I liked the Batman arc though.
I liked it as well. Yeah. So, and hey, that's what we'll be talking about next time. But this is a lot of fun. This is a great idea. Thanks for suggesting it to me. So now we can team up because, I mean, let's just say you are much more established on Facebook than I am with your Smallville season 11 page. I was very impressed by your amount of fans, my friend.
Yeah, I got lucky. It actually used to be more. Now, like in the past, like 3 or 4 years, it's just been dwindling. It was 80 something thousand. Now it's like 71. The fandom is actually just dwindling. Yeah.
Well, hopefully people start coming back, you know, because of the small.
Well, I believe it has to do with Facebook deleting fake pages. I think that it has a lot to do with it, honestly, because I have other pages and the same kind of thing starts happening with them. I own a MMA page. And if I don't like, if I'm not really, really up on stuff, the likes will dwindle.
And yeah, guys, if you have not read these comics, I highly recommend them to you. I assume they're still available digitally. Right, because it's the digital age, as comics are, and they have released them as graphic novel collections. You know, there is a lot that we did not get into, as we kind of did a brief overview here, because we didn't want to go, you know, panel by panel, page by page. But there's a lot of great stuff in here, and I highly recommend you guys seek these out and read them before Crisis on Infinite Earths, because you know what, they're in continuity, so they're still canon. So.
And the very first issue is already teasing the Crisis on Infinite Earths. You already have
there
a monitor.
Go.
You already have an Earth 2 character, or at least as recognized by Smallville Earth 2.
Yes, yes, very much so. It's all connected. Well, cool, man. Well, hey, this is going to be fun. We're going to go down the list here of all 8 episodes. So we're going to have 8 of these. These are going to be my Smallville special category of the podcast. So it's going to be all Smallville all the time up till Crisis on Infinite Earths. So I hope you guys enjoy it. But so Eric, thanks again for suggesting this team up here. But so if people want to find you out there on the internet, man, where can they find you?
You can find me on the Smallville Season 11 Facebook page, MMA Outsiders, which is my MMA Facebook page, and have a website. It's currently down, but I have a website for that. And I'll be there.
All right. Well, as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. As for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Still On to Smallville, or you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. So, Eric, thanks again, man. It's a lot of fun talking about these Smallville comics again. Dusting them off was a great excuse to. Otherwise, I would have waited another, you know, 5 seasons to do so. So, reading these sooner than I thought. So, a lot of fun there. And I'm looking forward to next time when we talk about Batman v Superman in Smallville. Until then, guys, always hold on to Smallville.